Unit 1.2.B, applying the principles of training. During the next few recordings, I'm going to discuss the principles of training, methods of training, warm-up and cool-down. In this recording, I will begin with the principles of training. These principles need to be followed to improve performance. These principles are the SPOR principles: specificity, progression, overload and reversibility. The first principle I will discuss is specificity. The definition for specificity is matching the training to the needs of the sporting activity and individual. All sports have their own needs. For example, long-distance runners and rugby players will train very differently. You have to train the correct components of fitness, muscle groups and skills to suit your sport. For example, a rugby player would look to improve power, strength and speed, targeting their quadriceps, hamstrings, pectorals and biceps. The skills they'll need to improve may be tackling and passing. Not only does training have to be specific to the sport, it has to be specific to their position. For example, a goalkeeper will train very differently to a left winger in football. I'm now going to provide a sporting example for specificity. A long distance runner would train very differently to a diver. A long distance runner would take part in continuous training, going on long runs and focusing on improving their cardiovascular endurance, as this replicates their event and increases the chance of winning their race. Whereas a diver will be focusing on flexibility during their somersaults, body position when diving, and would want to improve their movements before entering the water. This would have no positive impact on a long distance runner. The second principle of training I'm going to discuss is progression. The definition of progression is gradually increasing the amount of exercise in order for the body to adapt. This is working the body harder than normal and gradually increasing the amount of exercise, causing us to get fitter. A sporting example for progression could be a footballer looking to increase their fitness during pre-season, and they would use progression. To do this, they may try and run for a long duration of time each time they go on a run. This would improve their cardiovascular endurance, and they could therefore run for a longer period of time during their 90-minute football match, becoming a more effective player on the pitch and being able to get back to help to defend their team. Another sporting example could be a female gymnast is comfortable completing 3 sets of 20 sit-ups during her strength session. She may use the principle of progression by increasing the repetitions in each set to 25 reps. This will improve the components of muscular endurance in her abdominals and core muscles, allowing her to maintain a strong body position when on the parallel bars in competition. Unit 1.2.B, applying the principles of training. In the last recording, I introduced the 4 principles of training. In this recording, I'll discuss the principles of overload, including the sub-principle fit and the principle of reversibility. So the first principle I would discuss in this recording is overload. The definition for overload is when a greater than normal stress is applied on the body for training adaptations to take place. This should be monitored and adjusted to increase fitness levels. In order to increase fitness, the body must be worked harder than usual, causing stress and discomfort. Overload can be achieved by applying the FIT principle. FIT stands for frequency, intensity, time and type. I'm now going to explain the FIT principle in more detail. F is for frequency. This is how often you train for. So to increase fitness, you can increase the number of times you train per week. For example, this might be 3 times a week, 5 times a week, 6 days a week. However, if you train too often, this may increase the risk of injury. I is for intensity. This is how hard you train. This can be measured by working in your target heart zone, for example 60 or 80% of your maximum heart rate. The first T is for time. This is how long you train for. Each session should last at least 20 minutes in the target zone to experience any benefits. For example, if a teenage boy went jogging for 30 minutes, he'd improve his fitness for running for a longer period of time, say 40 minutes instead. The final T is for type. This is the type of training used. This is the method of training we've chosen to achieve a specific goal. Different types of training develops different components of fitness. If a female athlete was looking to increase strength, she may complete weight training. Or if she wanted to improve her cardiovascular endurance, she may take part in continuous training to suit her goals. I'm now going to provide a sporting example for overload. A long-distance runner looking to build up their cardiovascular endurance would use overload. To do this when training, they'll complete continuous training by going on runs. In order to apply the principle of overload, a runner would have to implement the FIT principle. They may increase the number of times they train to 4 sessions a week instead of 3. She may increase the time she runs for during each run, or increase the intensity by increasing their speed and using a higher target heart rate zone, which is applying a higher than normal stress on the body for adaptations to take place. The final principle of training is reversibility. The definition of reversibility is when any adaptation of training will be lost as a result of not training. This is losing your fitness levels and usually occurs when training stops due to illness, injury, or end of season. I'm now going to provide a sporting example for reversibility. If a badminton player was to suffer an injury, they would not be able to train and would experience reversibility. Fitness levels would be lost and will need to train harder to recover and regain their fitness. If a player does not build up gradually to full fitness, she may rush back into playing and will not be able to perform at a high level. A badminton player may experience a loss in power, which would cause her shots to be weak and easy to return from the opposition. Reversibility can be prevented during the off-season, however. It is important to continue to exercise so fitness is not lost. Athletes should still recover but not stop training completely, as it will make the return to the season more difficult. Unit 1.2.B, methods of training. I'm now going to move on to the methods of training. There are 7 methods of training in total. So there's continuous training, fartlek training, interval training, and then the other 4 methods of training are all types of interval training. These are circuit training, weight training, plyometrics, and high intensity interval training, also known as HIIT. During this recording, I'll go through the definitions and sporting examples for continuous training and fartlek training. So the first method of training is continuous training. The definition of continuous training is training that involves activity without rest intervals. Continuous training involves exercising at a steady, regular pace, completing exercises such as running, walking, swimming, rowing, or cycling for at least 30 minutes. This method of training is aerobic, so therefore we need to use oxygen. So if we think about sports people who may complete continuous training in their programmes, this might be a marathon runner as it replicates their competitive situation, a road cyclist, triathlete, or even a cross-country skier as their events last longer than 30 minutes. It is important that we know the components of fitness each method of training improves. Continuous training develops cardiovascular and muscular endurance. I'm now going to provide a detailed sporting example. So a road cyclist preparing to compete in the Tour de France would use continuous training as a method of training. This requires the athlete to cycle for at least 30 minutes. This would benefit their performance as many stages in the Tour de France last for more than 3 hours, replicating their event closely. By using continuous training, a cyclist will develop their cardiovascular and muscular endurance, allowing the heart and lungs to meet the demands of the body by delivering oxygen to working muscles, allowing them to cycle for a longer period of time. Each method of training has advantages and disadvantages. So the advantages of continuous training are: it is a highly effective method of training for long distance athletes. It needs only a small amount of equipment, so we can pick up our trainers and go out for a run with minimal equipment, and it is also fantastic for cardiovascular fitness. The disadvantages for continuous training are: it can become boring as people can lose motivation to continue going out and train. It does not improve anaerobic fitness, therefore it isn't really good for sports that require speed, such as a sprinter or even a footballer. The second method of training is fartlek training. The definition of fartlek training is training which varies in intensity and duration and consists of bursts of intense effort alternating with less strenuous activity. This involves exercising at different speeds or intensities. For example, a footballer may complete a training session around the AstroTurf, completing 30 metres jogging, 30 metres sprinting, 30 metres sidestepping, and 30 metres walking, and then that would be repeated continuously. This changes the speed, causing the method of training to be both aerobic and anaerobic. It can also be completed across different terrains, so it can be completed in your local neighbourhood, in the countryside, or park, or even on hills. Fartlek training would be a great method of training to use to develop cardiovascular endurance and speed. Therefore, the sports people this would benefit may include footballers, hockey players, rugby players, and netballers, as the changes in speed and intensity closely replicate the game and the movements necessary for the game. I am now going to provide a detailed sporting example for fartlek training. So a netballer may choose to use fartlek training in their training by repeatedly completing jogging, sprinting, sidesteps and walking exercises along the netball court. By using fartlek training, a netballer will improve their fitness and game as her speed and cardiovascular endurance will improve, allowing her to move quickly into a space to receive the ball off a teammate. As mentioned earlier, each method of training has advantages and disadvantages. So the advantages of fartlek training are, it is good for sports that require changes in speed. For example, hockey, netball as mentioned, football, rugby, and so on. It is also easily adaptable to suit different fitness levels. So somebody of a lower fitness could include more walking and jogging, and higher fitness might have more bursts of jogging and then speed works or sprints. The disadvantages of fartlek training include it's easy to skip the harder parts, and it's also difficult to know how hard somebody is training. Unit 1.2.B, Methods of Training. In the last recording, I discussed the definitions, components of fitness and sporting examples for continuous training and fartlek training. In this recording, I'll do the same for interval training and circuit training. So the third method of training is interval training. Interval training is training that incorporates periods of exercise and rest. So a simple sporting example would be sprinting with 25 metres and walking back to the start. Each interval is high intensity, therefore there is a build-up of lactic acid, but the rest in between each interval should allow recovery. This method of training is anaerobic, so therefore without oxygen. This method of training is great for developing speed and cardiovascular endurance. This method of training can be used for almost any sport, providing it is well planned. So examples may include game players such as a netballer, footballer, hockey players, and it can even help sprinters and swimmers. I'm now going to provide a detailed sporting example for a sports person who may use interval training. So a swimmer may complete interval training as a part of their training programme. This may include 6 lots of 50 metre freestyle sprints. At the end of each 50 metre sprint, the swimmer would climb out the pool and walk back to the start, ready to complete it again. This would improve a swimmer's speed. By improving speed, their performance will benefit as they'll be able to inject pace into their race, allowing them the opportunity to pass an opponent or win the race. A footballer may use interval training by including a football, so they might dribble as fast as they can, over 30 metres, keeping the ball under control, and then walking back to the start to repeat it 5 more times. There are both advantages and disadvantages to interval training. So the advantages are it can be quick and easy to set up. It can also easily replicate aerobic and anaerobic exercises to replicate a team game. So for example, the dribbling of a ball. The disadvantages to interval training are it can become boring and it can also be hard to keep going once you're fatigued and have a build-up of lactic acid. As mentioned earlier, there are 4 types of interval training and we need to be able to describe and provide examples for each of these. So the 4 subcategories are circuit training, weight training, plyometrics and high intensity interval training, also known as HIIT. So the first one I'm going to discuss is circuit training. So circuit training is a series of exercises performed at stations that focus on different muscle groups. Each exercise is a station which should work different areas of the body to avoid fatigue. Circuit training can be adapted to suit individual sports and it can be completed as a generic session focusing on different muscle groups including exercises such as squats, press-ups, planks, sit-ups, burpees, etc. Or it can be made specific to sports by using skill stations. For example, in football you might include dribbling, ball control and shooting stations. As circuit training can be adapted to suit individual sports, the components of fitness can also be tailored. However, it mainly develops cardiovascular endurance, muscular endurance and strength. I'm now going to provide a specific sporting example for a sports person who may use circuit training. A rugby player may use circuit training, including stations that focus on different skills. For example, passing, tackling, a 1v1 and shuttle runs. By completing circuit training, a rugby player would be working different areas of the body and also having periods of rest between each exercise to allow recovery. This will develop strength, speed and power, which will complement a rugby player's game. The skills included will improve encouraging more effective passes, increase speed and power to break the defensive line when running for a try. The advantages of circuit training are it's quick and easy to set up, it can be adjusted to specific It can be adjusted to be specific for certain sports, and it can be kept fun and engaging as each exercise changes after a minute or so. The disadvantages of circuit training are it requires the participant to be motivated to try and get the most out of it. Unit 1.2.B, Methods of Training. In this recording, I'm going to discuss the last three methods of training, which are also classified as types of interval training, as they include periods of work and rest. The final three are weight training, plyometrics, and HIIT. Weight training is a method of training that uses free weights or resistance machines. This can help someone to increase strength by using a high weight with low repetitions, such as bench press at 60 kilograms, completing it for 3 sets of 5 reps. Or it can also increase muscular endurance using low weights and high reps, for example, a triceps press with only a 5 kg dumbbell for 3 sets of 15 repetitions. Weight training will mainly develop an athlete's strength, muscular endurance and power. Sports people who will commonly use weight training are weightlifters, rugby players, footballers, 100-metre sprinters and track cyclists. I'm now going to provide a detailed sporting example of an athlete who may use weight training. A track cyclist would complete weight training. They may include exercises such as bench press, deadlifts and back squats to increase their strength and power in their legs using high weights and low reps. This will benefit their performance when racing as they'll be applying more force and power to the bike when pushing high watts through their pedals to gain a powerful sprint to win a race. The advantages of weight training are it can be adapted to suit different sports. It can also target specific muscle groups to strengthen them. The disadvantages of weight training are it can cause muscle soreness and injury if the incorrect technique is used. The next method of training I'm going to look at is plyometrics. So plyometrics is a method of training that uses jumping, hopping and bounding to increase power. These exercises involve rapid and repeated stretching and contracting of the muscle, increasing the speed at which they contract, improving the power they generate. Exercises can include jumping on and off boxes, hopping left to right, ladders and squat jumps. The main component of fitness plyometrics training develops is power. And the most common sports people that may benefit from plyometrics are long jumpers when taking off the board, triple jumpers throughout the three phases of their jump, high jumpers to gain height over the pole, sprinters to gain a powerful start out of the blocks, and basketballers to jump and intercept a pass or shoot a basket. I'll now provide a specific sporting example for an athlete completing plyometrics training. So a long jumper may complete plyometrics training as a method of their training. A typical plyometrics training session may include jumping on and off boxes, hopping and many bounding exercises. This will develop the power in a long jumper's legs, allowing them to generate more power when taken off the board to gain more height and distance in competition to gain a greater jump. The advantages of plyometrics training are it is easy to set up and it's very effective in developing power. And then the disadvantages of plyometrics training are it can put a lot of stress on the body, especially the knees and ankles. And plyometrics training can also cause injury if the incorrect technique is used. The final method of training is high intensity interval training, also known as HIIT. HIIT training is exercise that alternates between high intensity exercise and periods of recovery. The work intensity should be around 80 to 95% of your maximum heart rate and recovery should be at about 40 to 50% of maximum heart rate. The exercises are high intensity anaerobic exercises such as burpees, jumping jacks and high knees followed by a brief recovery time, usually of about 10 to 20 seconds. This can also be completed during running or cycling. For example, a high intensity interval session on a bike may include 40 seconds of high intensity pedaling, followed by 20 seconds of recovery pedaling, repeated 3 to 5 times. That block would then be followed by recovery pedaling for about 5 minutes, and then the whole block will be repeated again 3 to 5 times also. HIIT is beneficial to many sports, especially those who experience high levels of intensity and rest during their performances, so such as footballers, tennis players and hockey players, but it can even benefit athletes such as road cyclists. But all athletes may take part in some form of HIIT training during their programmes. HIIT training is brilliant for developing cardiovascular endurance and muscular endurance. The advantages of HIIT training are that it is intense but short in duration. It reaps the same benefits as long endurance activity, but in a much shorter duration of time. It improves the ability of the muscles to burn fat. And finally, the exercises can be chosen to suit an individual sport. And then the disadvantages of HIIT training are it can cause muscle soreness and injuries if the participant has low fitness. Unit 1.2.B, applying the principles of training and methods of training. So we've now covered the 4 principles of training and 7 methods of training. During this recording, I'll discuss the final section of the unit, which is all about the components of an exercise session. So every training or exercise session we complete should consist of a warm-up, a main activity and a cool-down. So I'll start off by discussing the 5 components of a warm-up and the effects of a warm-up. So a warm-up should last for around 10 minutes and it should consist of 5 components. These are a pulse raiser, mobility, stretching, dynamic movements and skill rehearsal. I'll now discuss each component in more detail. So the first one was a pulse raiser. Now, a pulse raiser should include exercises that slowly increase the heart rate. So common things that we would use are like jogging, running, skipping, sidesteps and high knees. The second component is mobility. And mobility exercises take the joints through their full range of movements. And this could include movements such as arm swings, hip circles and neck rotations. The third component is stretching. Now this is an especially important component. And this can involve static stretches where you remain still, for example, holding a quadricep stretch or a hamstring stretch, or it can include dynamic stretches such as leg swings and opening and closing of the gate. The fourth component is dynamic movements, and now these show a change in speed or direction. So examples might be short shuttle runs or agility runs. And then the final component is skill rehearsal, and this includes the most common skills that may be used in your chosen sport. So for example, in football, this could be passing or dribbling skills. Now we don't complete warm-up just for the fun of it, there is a purpose. So the purpose of a warm-up is to prepare the body for exercise and prevent injury, and this happens by the following occurring. So the first effect of the body is that body and muscle temperature increases gradually, and this prevents the body from injury and overheating. The second effect is that heart rate begins to increase, which allows the body to cope with the demand for oxygen once exercise begins. Blood flow and oxygen to the muscles increase. Flexibility of muscles and joints increase, reducing the chance of injury and allows a greater range of movements. Pliability of ligaments and tendons increase, which again reduces the risk of injury. And finally, the speed of muscular contractions increases, which allows the muscles to produce more explosive actions. After we have completed the main activity in a training or exercise session, we must complete a cool down. And a cool down similar to a warm up should last for approximately 10 minutes and consist of 2 components. These 2 components are low intensity exercise. Now this involves exercise such as light jogging and reduces the heart rate and body temperature back to normal. And then followed by the second component, which is stretching. These stretches are gentle, static stretches of the major muscle groups in the body. Now the purpose of a cool down is to return the body back to normal following exercise, and this is achieved by gradually lowering the heart rate and breathing rate. Body temperature is gradually reduced back to normal. But as these things are lowered gradually, it continues to circulate blood and oxygen to help remove waste products such as lactic acid and carbon dioxide which build up when we are doing exercise. And then a cool down also prevents delayed onset of muscle soreness, also known as DOMS, which we usually experience the day after, so 24 to 72 hours after our session. And it also helps prevent joint and soreness by stretching.